could you please state your name and what war era?
Yes, I'm Gary Nolte, and I'm Vietnam era.
Okay. Thank you. Can you tell me where you were born and raised?
I was born in Fairmont, Minnesota, and I lived there till I was 16, then moved to Moorhead.
Okay.
First day of my senior year was the first day in Moorhead.
Really? Now, what did your parents do?
My dad was a salesman, so he got transferred up here,
sure.
And so then they moved.
Okay. And you graduated high school
yes,
then from
yes.
Moorhead?
Yes.
And what did you do after high school graduation?
I tried to stay out of the draft.
No doubt.
This is 1963-64. Mm-hmm. I tried my hand at college a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up joining the Naval Reserve, and I was still in working college jobs, and I was an auto mechanic. That's where I cut my teeth, I guess.
Okay. How did you enter? So that's how you entered the service.
Yes,
then
I got the last billet for the Naval Reserve in North Dakota.
Okay.
The very last one. Some friends of mine were in. I got my draft notice, and they said, "Why don't you come out and sign up at the reserve?" So I did.
So where did you do your training with the Naval Reserve?
We trained right at the Quonset Huts in Fargo, right by at NDSU.
Okay, so that was handy going
yes.
to college
yeah.
and having your training right.
Yeah, I was
right in
well,
town.
I was a student at Moorhead State, but still, it was just a short hop, skip, and a jump to go. And then we had summer active duties. Go to boot camp, go to a shore float school. You go to the Great Lakes and sail on some World War II ship. And
mm-hmm. What did you think about the training involved?
The training was pretty easy for me. I mean, I was an athlete, and boot camp is athletics.
Okay. What was training like? What was boot camp like for those of us that don't know what goes on in boot
camp? Boot camp is something where they try to break you down completely and build you back up. I mean, in their mold. I mean, this is what it is. You want, if you say, do this, do it. Don't ask questions. Do it, and then, because life's may depend on it.
Okay. When did you get notice that you were going to Vietnam?
I got notice on January 15th, 1967.
What was that like, that day?
That day was
that information.
That was an awful day, actually, because normally I was in the reserve, of course, but I got activated.
Mm-hmm.
And normally we were supposed to have a month or two to get your stuff together. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd been on vacation with some friends. We took a road trip to California. Happened to drive right by where my ship was going to be when I went on active duty, but I didn't know that. I got back home, went to guard weekend. Saturday, they said, you're going on active duty on Tuesday. Okay, I'm in college. I have a job. I have a girlfriend. I've got a whole bunch of things to do, and there's a blizzard. And so, I mean, the town is locked down. You can't go anyplace.
Mm-hmm.
But Tuesday night, I've got to report to Treasure Island in San Francisco.
And you knew that once you went to Treasure Island, then you were on your way to Vietnam.
I knew that, yes. On a ship, but I knew I was going there.
Okay. What did your parents say?
Well, I was 21.
Okay.
So that wasn't... My dad was a pilot in World War II. My uncles were in the service. So it's pretty much it was an obligation. They didn't mm-hmm. like the fact that I was in the Navy because they were all Army. But
so it was a branch
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. But otherwise, there was no, I mean, my parents really had no qualms about it. I mean, I was 21, pretty much able to make my mind up.
Mm-hmm. And how did you really feel that day?
That day, that very day, I felt when I walked in, when I got off the bus at Treasure Island at midnight, and I looked at that sign, and I'm standing there with my sea bag and my ill-fitting boot camp uniform, wondering, you know, what did I get myself into
mm-hmm.
here? And then got to walk clear across the island to get to the transit barracks, and then, yeah, then the next 35 days, we sat on Treasure Island, getting our shots, getting our dental work done, waiting for orders.
Mm-hmm. What was that like, 35
that
days
boring.
At Treasure Island?
That was boring.
Really?
I mean, with little money, because, I mean, I was used to having a lot more money than $80 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But we're living in a barracks with
sure.
with on a deck that was 75 people that you didn't know, your best friends.
Wow.
And Treasure Island's a nice place, but it was still a transit barracks, and we still had no home.
Okay, 35 days, then what happened?
Then an odyssey began. I mean, they took so little time to get me to Treasure Island. Then I went to Anchorage, Alaska, to Tokyo, Japan, to Yokosuka, Japan, to Okinawa, to the Philippines, back to Sasebo, Japan. This all took about 90 days. In a barracks to here, on an airplane to here, on another airplane to here, in a barracks in the Philippine Islands, which is actually was an old POW camp. They just turned the wire the other way to keep the people out instead of keeping the people in. And all that time, we had no pay records, so we weren't getting paid.
Oh.
And so already exacerbating a problem.
Yes.
There was a real problem, and we were using sharpening our razor blades on the shower floor.
Wow.
And using rainbow soap.
Wow.
And it was just like they forgot about us. And when we got to the Philippines in Subic Bay, the barracks commander was corrupt. He was caring for his little group of people, and we were doing all the work. And he lost our orders got buried behind a file cabinet, so we couldn't leave. Our records were lost. So here we are, we're working in the mail room, the fleet mail room, dragging mailbags around, mm-hmm. wondering what is going on. Still got no soap for showers.
Yeah, how awful.
And finally we came back one day, and the guy's in handcuffs. The SPs are hauling him away because he wasn't who he said he was, and he was bullying people, and people were getting beat up, and it was pretty much a gang warfare thing, and I'll say this, he was black, yeah. And it was right in the middle of the race riots, mm-hmm. that were going on in the military at the time.
So he got busted, he got busted,
we got, and we all got orders, report to the USS Navasota, now you're going back to Japan, because that's where your ship might be.
Oh.
So we're chasing, they wouldn't, in those days, they didn't know, there was an old saying, loose lips sink ships,
yeah.
So nobody knew where you're going. I mean, all the people in the bars in town knew where you were going, but we didn't know where we were going. And so they said, well, you're getting on the Navasota and you're going back to Japan because your ship is going to be there. So now we take a trip back to Sasebo, Japan from the Philippines on a Navy oiler.
Okay.
And we get into another barracks situation. This one is where they pried the boards off the doors, and we had to clean the place up before we could move in. Because they weren't expecting us.
And that was in Japan?
That's in Japan.
So now, how long were you on the ground in Japan?
The total time, the last total time was like 15, 18 days.
And what happened during that time?
There was really nothing. They gave us little meaningless details to do. I mean, we waxed a floor that hadn't been waxed for 30 years, and it sucked up a lot of wax. Mm-hmm. But we were cleaning out barracks that had been abandoned after Korea, which was 15 years before.
Were you finally getting a paycheck?
We finally got paid. They finally got the paymaster at Sasebo finally said, yeah, we can get you some money. So that was just like having to have money
I
again.
Bet.
I just lost my last 10 cents in a penny ante poker game. So.
Wow. Yeah, well, thank God you got the paycheck,
yep,
finally.
Yep.
Okay, so after the 18 days in Japan, you went on another ship
then? No, actually, then my ship came in.
Okay.
My ship came to Sasebo.
Okay.
Then we got assigned on board.
And that's what took you to Vietnam.
That's what took us to Vietnam, yeah.
How long on the ship leaving Japan until you got to Vietnam?
It's they do some training along the way, so it's probably about 10 days.
Okay.
And then we would be 30 days on the line, 3 days, 4 days in port, 30 days on the line.
Okay.
3-4 days in port.
What was life like on the ship?
The shipboard life was quite comfortable, really. I mean, you had your job, you knew mm-hmm. what to do, you had to do it. I was on an aircraft carrier, and so there was a lot of activity, and we were always... There's a lot of people on board, too. There's 3,500 people on there.
Wow.
And but we have our own. We had our own little group. I first started out as a in the journalism department. I was writing hometown news releases and that. And then my editorial comments didn't fit with the communications officer, so I got transferred.
Okay.
Because I wasn't rated. I was just a seaman, so I didn't have. They couldn't. They could just get rid of me. They could. They couldn't say, "Okay, you would do this." No,
okay.
You're gone.
Okay. So you get to Japan. I mean, you get off the ship, going from Japan to Vietnam. What happens when you're in? Get to Vietnam.
Well, then we start flying airplanes. I mean, I didn't fly airplanes, but we start operating because we were doing a lot of close air support for the Marines, and just doing a. Generally, what aircraft carriers do.
Still on the aircraft carrier.
Still, yeah. I spent my whole two years on the aircraft carrier.
You did? Yeah. Okay. So you weren't on the ground.
I never touched the ground.
Good for you.
I do have some Vietnamese currency, but my daughter brought that back.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you were on the ship the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was that like?
Well, it's, I was a signalman. Which is visual communication. So I got to have a suntan every day.
Oh, nice.
And I stood one deck above the flight deck and watched hundreds of airplanes launched and recovered every day. And saw some accidents, bad accidents sometimes. And just in general, we were in charge of, we were the flagship, and we communicated with our escorts. So we're, and everything was done with flashing light and with signal flags. Nothing was done by radio because we didn't have the radios mm-hmm. like they have now. So if we want to tell our destroyer that we're going to change course, then we have to flash to him, Mike Corbin, Mike, my course 270. We're gonna come around at 270 to launch airplanes because we have to launch airplanes into the wind.
Interesting. So you said you were on the ship off the shore for over 2 years?
Not 2 years straight.
Okay.
But there was an interesting event that I was just, some of this, after you called me, some of this stuff started to come back. We were just about finished with our first tour. July 29th is the date.
So how long was the first tour?
My first tour was about, in Vietnam, was about 4 months.
Oh.
Let's see, I got there in May about, and we were supposed to ship out in at the end of July.
Okay. So that's relatively a short
that
tour,
was short,
isn't it?
It was a short tour because I spent so much time trying to get there.
Sure. Yeah.
But then on July 29th, the USS Forrestal was supposed to relieve us. I mean, there's four carriers all the time in the Gulf. The Forrestal was supposed to relieve us, and we all turned into the wind to have one big airstrike that we were flying, and the Forrestal blew up. It's an aircraft carrier, but they got a fire on the flight deck, and they were our relief, and we watched them burn, and so we got extended for another 30 days so they could get another ship over. But a bunch of over 100 people lost their lives on the boat, and we were watching all this through binoculars because we were about 3 miles away, and this could have been us, and they used our deck right below my workspace was where they. Was the morgue, where they helicoptered the bodies over, so I had body bags piled up underneath my workstation for the better part of 2 days, and then we cruised the water around there looking for survivors that would have gotten blown overboard or what, and we'd see a gas tank from an airplane, and there'd be a shark swimming around it,
wow.
and I don't know how many people actually perished in the water, but. I think I've got a tape on it that I recorded off of public radio.
And what was the cause of that fire?
It was actually, Senator John McCain was on that ship. And
He was.
And his airplane was hit by a rocket that got cooked off by somebody else's exhaust, shot through his fuel tank. His airplane was the first one that started on fire. And then when you got all that gas burning on the flight deck with all that ordnance, then things start going up. Yeah.
Oh.
So it was an incredible sight. We all took pictures, but they confiscated them all.
Really?
Yep. because we were just, I was on the signal bridge. Of course, we had binoculars, telephoto lenses, and all that other stuff. We're only 3 miles away.
That must have been absolutely heart-wrenching.
That was heart-wrenching.
Knowing that there was nothing you could do.
Nothing we could do. I mean, we were providing aid. We had people that came. We had a hospital, of course, on our boat. And so they were helicoptering the badly wounded over to us. And, of course, they were helicoptering the bodies over to us because they had no place to put them there. And just to watch that thing burn.
How awful.
That was probably my most depressing time the whole time I was in the Navy.
How do you wipe images like that from your mind?
You can't. It's just there. I mean, you'd see the World War II movies and you see aircraft carriers burning, and it's what, I mean, that's the job. I mean, that's what it is.
So for 2 days you had the bodies there, yeah. Then they were taken to...
Taken someplace. They were taken off.
So was this now during the first tour?
First tour.
And then how long a break did you have between the tours?
Okay, well, we got extended after that, so we didn't get back to the States until October.
Okay.
And then I got 30 days leave, which I took.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
And went back in December. January, the USS Pueblo was captured by the North Koreans. So we got emergency recall to go to Korea. So in January, we got cut short by a month for our stay. We were supposed to leave in February. We had to go in January. So we went to Korea to show the flag.
And how long were you in Korea?
35 days, about.
And then on the ship also the whole time?
Yeah, also. And then just showing the flag. I mean, the Russians were there. They were harassing us, and... We're just showing the North Koreans that we're here and we're not here to help.
Mm-hmm. What was that like?
That was cold. I mean, remember, I'm an outside watchstander, and it's the wind comes off of Siberia.
Oh, wow. Enough so said on that one, yeah.
And so we're working outside. You could be outside for maybe 15 minutes. Yeah. And I got the last pair of long underwear in Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
I went to the PX and I had one pair of long underwear and I bought it.
Good purchase.
Yes, I could have sold them a number of times.
No doubt. So after 30 days showing the flag, then what goes?
Japan, then Vietnam.
So this time, were you still on the ship?
Yep. The ship was the whole time. But the second time, we got called out of Japan because the Tet Offensive began.
And what was that?
That was a big offensive that the North Vietnamese launched against the South.
Okay.
And it was called Tet.
Okay.
And Tet is a Vietnamese holiday, Chinese holiday. So they launched this huge assault, and then we got called down south because our airplanes were flying close air support for the Marines.
And how long did that offensive...
That was about 35, 40 days, I think, something like that. It lasted quite a while. We were on the line over 40 days one time during that. And we were flying 24/7.
And what was that like?
It was just a grind. Because I lived underneath the catapults. And when they're launching airplanes at night, you could hear that thing coming over the top of you like a train. And then it hits the stop and it goes bang. And so we decided finally, I was assigned to a place called the Flag Plot, which is a control center for the operation if you have an admiral on board. But it was also the coolest air-conditioned place on the ship. So we all moved into there, which was up on the island structure of the ship, which was, you know, we just go down to take our showers, but most of the time we stayed in there because it was a lot more comfortable.
So you had you got restorative sleep.
We got refuge.
Yes, good for you. So after that, and then on to Vietnam, how long were you in Vietnam on the ship?
On the ship, we were there until about the middle of September.
So how many months?
That would have been January, February, till about the 15th of September.
Okay.
And as a reservist, I had a two-year commitment. And it's on the 15th of September, which happens to be my wife's birthday. And I didn't know her then, so it's, sure. it's a whole separate deal.
Sure.
On the 15th of September, we got notice that we were all getting early outs because it was a drawdown on force. So all of the reservists were getting early outs.
So great
getting
news.
Out in January, I could get out the 1st of October as soon as I got back to the States.
Sure.
But I chose to stay on board for another 30 days because half of our crew was reserve.
Okay.
And or half of my team was reserve, and if I'd have left with everybody else, it wouldn't have been anybody left.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed until Halloween.
Okay.
I just stayed another 30 days because I wasn't in, I couldn't get into college anyway.
Yeah.
It was the wrong time of the year, so.
And what was that time like?
That was quite relaxing. I mean, it really was. I was in charge of me, or I was in charge of about 10 other guys too.
Mm-hmm.
But we did our duty because we pretty much were stand down,
mm-hmm.
which meant that there was no communications going on, which was a big deal. And so we just had to clean up our spaces and
sure.
and stay out of trouble.
So you got back on Halloween?
I got home to Fargo. I got off the boat on Halloween, so I got home about the 4th of November.
And then that year was?
68.
But the war was still going strong.
Still going strong, still sending people over.
Did you have to return at all, or
no.
were you done?
I was done with my active duty component. I was done, but I was still obligated to be in the reserve.
Okay.
And still drill weekends and that, and go on 2 weeks active every summer.
What was it like stepping foot on homeland?
It was
in November.
It was positively incredible. I mean, it's just to get back home. Of course, everything changes in 2 years. Everything changes in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty special. I mean, it was there was people. I drove back the second time I came home. I drove back, so nobody knew I was coming.
Big surprise.
Yeah. I had mailed everything home,
uh-huh.
you know, except for my sea bag. I had mailed everything else home, so.
So you drove back from California then?
From San Diego, yeah.
Okay. Well, that was a fun cross-country trip.
Well, it was really fun because I bought a Corvette.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we had combat pay, we had overseas pay. I didn't spend a lot of money, mm-hmm. and so I was able to write a check for cash for a Corvette.
Good for you.
So a friend of mine and I, from Minneapolis, we played Route 66.
Good for you. What a fun treat after the previous two years.
Yeah.
How long were you in the reserve after you got back?
I retired from the reserve in 86.
Okay.
So I did 21 total years.
And how far did you have to travel staying in the reserve after you were back from Vietnam?
Well, the drills, of course, were just in Fargo, but we would have quarterly, we'd have to go to Minneapolis
mm-hmm.
For a weekend, and then once a year we had to go someplace for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And usually, because of my specialty as a communicator, I would go on a ship and go someplace.
Really?
So I'd get orders to go to Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And I'd get on a ship in Portland, Oregon, and ride it down to San Diego.
Nice.
And in the meantime, we stopped in San Francisco and that business. So I'd get orders to go to Jacksonville, Florida, and then we'd end up in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands.
Okay.
And that, I mean, it wasn't like being on a cruise ship.
No.
Because
no.
we're working.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, and generally, especially in the specialty I was in, there weren't a lot of people that were there. And one cruise I was on, it was 15 days, and I think I got 2 hours of sleep one night, 1 hour of sleep the other night for 15 days because there was only two of us.
Oh, my gosh.
And the admiral happened to think that he needed to put out all the communications via flashing light.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
So you got to see a lot of places.
I did. I stopped writing them on my sea bag after a while, but there was a lot of interesting things.
What was one of the most interesting places that you ever had to go to?
St. Croix in the Virgin Islands was really interesting because there were four of us reservists on an old Navy destroyer. We tied up to the dock, and when we're getting ready to leave, the Navy sent an airplane for us that had engine trouble. So we caught a ride with an Army Hilo back to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and that was a very interesting ride.
What went on?
Well, he gets up in the air after we're in the airplane, after in his aircraft, we get up in the air and he says, "Anybody hungry?" "Well, yeah, we could eat." "Well, here's a McDonald's." Boom, right into McDonald's. Lands in the parking lot with his helicopter.
Wow.
he was a Cobra pilot, which they're pretty crazy anyway.
Yeah. So you got McDonald's via helicopter.
Yep.
Not many people do
that.
No,
not very many people get to do that at all. And I guess that one of the last, after I left the newspaper and became a stockbroker, I was getting pressure from my family to get out of the reserve because I didn't have the time to spend doing that. So I waited as long as I could before I went back on, took another 2 weeks. I put in for orders in 1984, any place. Just, I need to go and I need to go and just because I want to get done with this so I can be done. And so I got orders to the SEAL team.
Interesting.
In San Diego, yeah.
And how long were you with them?
Just for 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
But
that must have been an amazing
experience. Well, I was working in communications, but I'm also a firearms expert, so they put me, gave me a bunch of parts and said, "Put some guns together."
Interesting. What was that like?
That was fun. That was really fun. I lost 15 pounds in 2 weeks.
And how so?
Well, because they run every morning for 5 miles before they have breakfast.
I didn't realize. Yes,
every morning
they
on the beach, they are out there running.
Oh my God!
Then there's an hour's worth of calisthenics, and then we went to breakfast.
Wow.
So it was kind of fun for an old 35-year-old to keep up with those guys.
And what was the average age of the SEAL team?
They were in their 20s mostly, but they're all jocks.
Sure.
I mean, they're all guys that jump on airplanes and. Yeah. That kind of thing. But yeah, they were all jocks.
Wow. What other standout people did you meet in the military during your time? Anybody really stand out more than others?
People that really made a big difference to me, yeah, there were several. I mean, Bob Weifold, who is a retired judge in North Dakota, mm-hmm. was one of my commanding officers. And so I got to know him pretty well. And another gentleman by the name of Gordon Lell, Concordia professor, but he was a reserve captain. We won the national award, the Four Star Trophy, in Fargo for having the best unit in the country.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's a real honor.
It was. And I even have the ribbon in my book.
Yeah, that's great. I want to see this. Do you go to any reunions?
We have a Chief Petty Officers Association in Fargo, and try to get together on the Navy's birthday, and whenever there's a retirement for a Chief Petty Officer at the Reserve Center, I get invited. And we used to have more promotions when there were a lot more people out there, so whenever we had to do a hazing, then I would get invited. Not because I'm an expert hazer, but I'd get invited out for that also. But, but now the unit has gone from over 400 people to about 100.
Okay. And that happens with age, time.
Well, it also it happens with forced necessity and you know, what you need. Now, everybody in Fargo is either a medical person or a construction battalion person.
Interesting.
And we used to have entire shipboard replacement units. We were assigned to the USS Dixie. And so there would be 30 of us that would go to the USS Dixie for our active duty.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked together in that business, and we knew each other. And so we could actually take over the ship and sail it ourselves.
Interesting.
But now it's not that way anymore.
Yeah. Now, when you got done and you said you're married, you have children, you have foster children.
Yes, yes.
Do you want to share with us your decision to have Vietnamese foster children?
It's an interesting story, and it really is. I was at a reserve weekend, and a gentleman by the name of Ming Tran spoke to us. about, and it was an interesting story that he had, a compelling story about boat people and the refugee kids. And I came home after my reserve weekend, and I said to my wife, Cindy, I said, Cindy, we got something to talk about. She says, you know, I got something to talk about, too. She'd heard the same presentation at church, the same presentation, the same day. So we said, you know, we need to look at this. So we called Lutheran Social Services on Monday. They came out on Tuesday, and Thursday we had three girls.
Three girls. Were they sisters?
Yes.
And what year was this?
This was 1985.
85. How old were they?
They were 14, 15, and 16.
Just 1 year apart.
Yeah.
14, 15, and 16. And how long were they living with
they
you?
They lived with us for a year. And then their our church, Trinity Lutheran, repatriated their entire family. So there were three kids there were three sisters, and there was three brothers, and then there was three younger ones that were at the refugee camp with the parents, and we got them all in a house in South Moorhead.
Wonderful. So they were all reunited.
They were reunited, and then we got Mr. Quack a job, and they got self-sufficient. They went on welfare, and then they moved to Massachusetts because they had relatives there. So they live in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Do you still keep in contact with
them? We get Christmas cards from them.
Okay.
Which is interesting from Buddhists.
Sure. Yeah. What was that year like, having those three?
It was a real learning curve for my children.
Now, did these three sisters speak any English?
No.
That would be very hard, I would think.
It was our job to teach them English. We took them to ESL classes.
Okay.
We took them. We spoke. No, I don't speak Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. And we had a Vietnamese dictionary, but we didn't use it unless we really had to. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting thing. For instance, my daughter, that wasn't in this house, but my daughter took them downstairs to show them how to take the shower worked. Mm-hmm. So they're in there, and she turns the water on, and it's hot.
Yeah.
And it's business. About a week later, they don't smell like they've been taking baths.
Uh-huh.
But we've been washing their hands in the shower.
Oh. Yeah.
So then we got that straightened out.
Sure.
And the girls became friends with my daughter. And my son didn't really want much to do with it.
Really?
Yeah.
And why was that, do you think?
Because they were foreigners.
Okay.
He never really got... It was at the age where it was not very important to him.
Sure.
And then after they left, we got a boy.
A Vietnamese boy?
Yes. Yeah. And he lived with us for several years.
And how old was he when
he
came?
He was 16 also.
Did he speak English?
Perfect.
Oh, wonderful. That helps a lot.
He was an Amerasian boy. He was delivered by a street woman in Saigon, and the midwife that delivered him adopted him because the mother couldn't take care of him.
Oh, sad.
So the midwife was his mother, or was his mm-hmm. was his raising was his custody mother, but
sure.
Birth mother was different. But Tim came to us, and he lived with us for several years, and we're still in really close contact with him.
And what was the age when he came? You
16.
Said? 16. Okay.
And we got him. We graduated. He graduated from high school and did his college, and then he went off to California, and went to fashion design school.
Good for him. Is that where he is now?
No, he's in Tennessee.
Okay. And do you still keep in touch with him?
I get it. We share a birthday.
Oh, wonderful.
So yeah, we stay in close touch.
Great. Did you welcome any other Vietnamese?
We had another boy, briefly, about a month, and got him resettled with some. He was having a lot of trouble, and we got him resettled with a really nice family. Actually, she was my former sales assistant when I worked at Westacre's.
Oh, nice.
And then we had another girl after that we have been adopted by her.
Oh, wonderful!
So I'm dad. I'm not foster dad. I'm dad.
That's awesome. How old was she when she came?
She was 17.
Okay.
But she had some trouble with some foster homes, and mm-hmm. actually one of her foster mothers died.
Oh, how sad.
And it was a single mother, mm-hmm. and she died. And so Lynn's got no place to go, and she's not old enough to time out of the mm-hmm. system yet. So she was came to us as what they called a troubled girl.
Oh.
But she wasn't troubled. She just needed to be understood.
Sure.
And she's turned out to be the most fun of all of them.
Oh, awesome. How long did she stay with you?
She was with us for almost 5 years.
And where is she now?
She's in Denver.
Okay.
And we were just out last spring to her daughter's high school graduation.
Wonderful.
And her son is graduating this spring, and then he's coming to NDSU.
That's terrific.
So I'll have a Vietnamese grandson in town.
That is awesome.
But we decided to do it, Linda, because I felt that when we left Vietnam, we left them in a real mm-hmm. in a real mess.
Mm-hmm. That is so gracious of you and your wife to take in someone from a foreign land, and especially those that don't even speak English. That takes a very special person welcome someone in.
It was an interesting time.
Yeah, I bet you learned a lot.
Oh, we did. We learned a bunch. The last daughter, Lynn, was with us during her senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had a French foreign exchange student and my daughter.
Interesting.
So we had a little dormitory upstairs.
That's great. A French foreign student.
Yes.
Foreign student.
Yes. And the thing about it is that the French had a big influence in Vietnam.
Really?
Well, yeah. French Indochina.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it was before it became Vietnam. It was French Indochina.
Oh, my gosh.
So they fought a war in the 50s.
Yeah.
A war of independence from France, because the French got them mm-hmm. back after the Japanese were chased out.
So what was the relationship with those three girls?
Oh, they were just like dormitory sisters. I mean,
that's wonderful.
They'd go over in the park and talk all night long. So lay on, there's a hill over in the park, a big
uh-huh.
hill over in the park. They go over there and lay on that hill and look at the stars. And,
oh, nice.
And they had boyfriends. They all went to prom together.
Great.
And so, and my foster son, Tin, came over and did their hair. And so, yeah, we had a beauty salon in here.
That's great. So how did you feel? Was it 86 you said you were done?
Yes.
What was that? What was that like?
It was a sense of loss, really.
Really?
Well, I'd been in the Navy for half of my life.
Sure.
And you get used to the people that you're around. It's mm-hmm. different people than in the professional mm-hmm. world. I mean, after I graduated from college, I went into the newspaper business, and I went into the stock brokerage business. And it was a different kind of people. I mean, mm-hmm. you got all, there's a lot of working class people in the reserve, especially in the listed reserve.
Sure.
And they're wonderful people. I mean, and
yeah.
I got used to them, being around them.
Uh-huh.
And the excitement of their, I get to put on my uniform. I get
yes.
And I still put mine on every yeah. Veterans Day. And I still march in parades and that kind of
That's
thing.
That's great.
But it was a sense of loss, almost.
Did it take a while for that to subside?
Yeah, it did. It was the first time when I didn't have to go on active duty for 2 weeks. The mm-hmm. next year, that's the first time that it mm-hmm. that subsided.
Sure. Well, good for you. Are there any other memories you'd like to share before we close this interview? Anything that stands out that you'd like to say?
I was proud to serve. I mean, I was proud to serve. I mean, I didn't understand what we, still don't understand completely what we were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it was important to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you need, when your country calls, if everybody says, I'm not going,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be trouble.
Absolutely. How would you like to be remembered, Gary?
I'd like to be remembered as someone that cared. That's how I would put it.
Mm-hmm. An excellent way to be remembered. And for you, you'll be remembered also as a foster father.
Yeah, it's a proud moment. It really is.
Thank you very much, Gary.
You're welcome.